Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Nothing to Fear, your weekly horror movie podcast, hosted by me, Billy Schultz, and my two friends. They're not hosts. I don't know why I can't get this down. I don't know why. It's been months. I'm the host. You're also here. Every week on the show, we watch a different horror movie and talk about that horror movie in whatever manner we deem fit. So all through this month, we've been picking actually scary horror movies. And Luke, it was your pick, but I have to do the introductions so Alex can pick the movie he's going to watch next week. But Luke, how are you doing today? Luke Mason.
Pretty good. Yeah. It's the smokiest it's been all summer.
Ah, right, you jinxed now. It. Everyone was like, oh, yeah,
but it's smoke. Okay. Summer camps are over, so I don't care. Fair. I mean, I care to the extent that things don't burn down, but yes, no further. Mm-hmm. I don't care any more than that.
The no further.
Is it,
no.
Is it nearby to you, or what's
like,
burning?
Kind of. But it's the smoke travels so far that it's just like where the winds go. And so, yeah, the last couple days have been super smoky, very reminiscent of 2021. So, it just made me grateful for how unsmoky July and August were this year.
Sure, of course. And I forget, is it like in a pretty risky spot in terms of like summer fires and wildfires and stuff? Like, do you have to evacuate ever? Or...
next to a lake, right?
Yeah.
It's less risky here than other places in BC. It's not zero risky, but it's like not the highest. Yeah, because there's a lake right beside here. So any fire, be hard for the fire to get over from those mountains on that side of the lake. So like the ones behind Nelson, but they did some brush fires in the winter last year to kind of like... do controlled burnings to clear areas, so it's like harder to get into town. So
right, that makes sense. Well, good. I'm glad you're safe. You know, breathe easy.
And, well, don't go outside.
Yeah, and you're really glad.
And
the summer was unsmoky.
I had an interesting experience the other night. So we record on Sundays, and on Friday night / Saturday morning, there were two different black bears in my backyard.
Oh, my.
Going through a neighbor's garbage that they carried into our yard. I don't know why they couldn't just go through the neighbor's garbage in the neighbor's yard, but they had to bring it to our yard. I don't know. These bears are finicky.
Black bear walking in the dead of night, huh?
Yeah. But honestly, one of them was just fucking huge. Like, I couldn't believe how big he was. And he's just like, oh, they're like sniffing around, going through like all these gross chicken bones and maxi pads. And I was just like, ugh.
What do you do to mitigate that stuff? Like,
well, you're like, ideally your garbage is sheltered, like in a
it's got a lid,
can.
Right?
Yeah, it's in a garbage can, like in your shed or like in your house underneath something until garbage day. Alas, Yogi knows how to python. I've never seen so many bears in town this year. There's like seven of them, and they're like walking around in the streets
Holy
in daytime
shit.
Now. Wow. So, yeah, it's weird.
They're getting bold. Nice.
I'm telling you, global warming has all of these knock-on side effects you just didn't expect. Mm-hmm. Bears in the neighborhood, you know?
Well, that's, I'm glad you're safe. Keep Ranger inside, I guess.
Yeah, it was weird. Like, because like you're kind of used to seeing pictures of animals like that. Mm-hmm. But to see them like kind of close, because it's in the backyard, I looked through my window in the kitchen, it's like 25 feet, and I was like, holy fuck, these animals are huge.
Yeah.
Wait, the bear was 25 feet?
No,
like away from me.
Oh, okay. I was like that's
like very
a big
close
bear.
To see. Yeah, but like I turned the backlight on, it didn't phase him, he just sit there, and it's like his head is bigger than my torso.
Yeah.
It's like crazy.
They're huge animals. And
are they dumb? Well, are bears dumb?
They're kind of like dogs, I think, in terms of intelligence. Like,
I don't think dumb is exactly the right word. Most species of bears are kind of like skittish. They don't really want a confrontation with noise. That's why like making noise is usually good. They recommend if you go on a hike, make a lot of noise, talk loudly, because it kind of scares. It preemptively scares the bears away.
You can
get bear bells. But if they're hungry, it's kind of a different game, like any animal, right? So,
well, especially getting into like hibernation season, they're just like, I don't care what you're doing; it's time for calories, motherfuckers.
Yeah,
like...
exactly.
Well, thank you for the Nelson check-in. That was extensive.
There's been some things happening here.
Yeah, that's great.
There's been some things.
What about you, Alex? How's Calgary? Any bears? Any cougars? What's going on?
Oh,
I mean, you ever been to Cougar Ridge? There's so many cougars there.
Hey. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. I mean, this was a very uneventful week for me. There's really nothing new, no updates. Last week was a better week for updates. This week, less so. Yeah.
Glad to hear you're doing okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
End of report.
Yeah, boring report this week, but, report. You know, come back next week. Maybe we'll get something more exciting.
Oh, boy. Can't wait.
Okay, I'll be there.
As for myself, school has started again. Year two of the university is under the old belt, and oh boy, it's already a lot of work. And
isn't this year like six, seven?
Yeah. Cumulatively, I guess this would be my eighth year of post-secondary education. Yeah.
So you're real experienced.
Oh boy, am I real experienced. But no, it's going well. In terms of wildlife encounters, Wesley, I have Wesley to deal with, who's just screaming.
That's wildlife.
Just lie down, bud. Yesterday, Kelly and I went to the Biodome in Montreal. It's just like it's not quite a zoo, and it's not quite like a wildlife rehabilitation center. It's literally just like a totally enclosed space, and they have little biomes of like a tropical area, a northern sort of forest, and like a subpolar region. And you can see little animals there, but they don't have like, it's not like the zoo where you have plaques and it's like, this is what this animal is. It's just like, you get to go look at animals. So It was cool. I saw raccoons. They're cute. They got weird hands.
They sure do. Such weird hands.
Weird, gross little greebly fingers. I don't like it.
So I sleep outside in the summer for the most part. Not so much the last week because of the bears. But the vast majority of the times I do get woken up by an animal, it's a skunk, and skunks are skittish and they don't really care about you. They just run away.
Yeah.
But a couple times it was raccoons, and raccoons are hilarious because, like other animals, they just skedaddle. If you catch a raccoon, they just stare at you like you caught them doing something wrong. Like they all just look up at you. Like, and there was like one time it was just four, and I looked down and they're all just like staring at me, and it was a staring contest. They're just like, oh, busted.
Oh no.
Well, if they stare at you long enough, someone's got to make a move, and more likely than not, you're going to back away, and then they're going to get to continue to do what they do.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. But it's funny because it honestly looks like they think they're in trouble or something. Like, oh, shit. They don't run away. They just stare at you. I love it. Raccoons are hilarious.
Yeah, they're great. And you know what else is great? Mm. Honestly, not to spoil my rating later, but this movie I thought was really great. So Luke. Tell us about the movie that we picked this week, and I can't wait to get into talking about it.
I gave a forced choice to the two of you of two different films. And so, unknowing what it was, but with the name of the director and the writer, we as a group, but me spearheading it, chose 2007's Dead Silence. Directed by James Wan, written by Lee Whannell of Saw fame, and then later Insidious fame, and then James Wan also later Malignant fame, which are all in this movie.
Talk about spiritual successor. Oh my gosh.
My gosh. Like this, well, no, I shouldn't. I'm not going to get into the analysis yet. But yeah, so I guess maybe I will say, Billy, what did you know about this movie going into it?
Honestly, I didn't know a single thing about this movie. I had never seen the trailers. When I saw the poster, like when I looked for it on Netflix or whatever, and I saw the poster of like the ventriloquist dummy with the shush finger up, I was like, oh, I've seen this poster before, but that was it. And, you know, I didn't know thing one going into it. And in fact, a little peek behind the curtain, I sent a message in the WhatsApp group before watching this movie asking what we should do for November, either Spooky Forest Month or Creepy Doll Month, not knowing that this movie was like revolved creepy around doll creepy movie. Dolls.
Like the creepy doll movie, other than maybe Annabelle.
Right. Which is also James Wan has a hand in that too. So yeah, I didn't know anything, but I was pleasantly surprised, and I really can't wait to talk about it. Yeah. So I'll leave it off there. Didn't know a thing at all, but yeah. What about you, Alex? Did you know anything about Dead Silence?
Yeah, just like you. I was like, oh, I've never heard of this, but you know, we know of the director and writer quite well at this point, so I was like, okay, it'll probably be like spooky and have a twist ending. And then I saw the poster just like you, and I was like, okay, I've seen this poster before, but the film itself has never, you know, resonated anything for me. So yeah, I went into it kind of yeah, not knowing what to expect other than creepy doll.
So had you seen this before, Luke? Like, have
no, I hadn't seen it, and I knew almost nothing about it other than it was about a dolls. But I actually kind of like retroactively remembered that I knew the kind of twist ending with the protagonist's father from a lot of those YouTube top 10 lists I always reference on this show that, you know, whatever
twist
pop
endings
culture top 10 twist
see
endings.
Coming.
So, and it was funny because when I was watching this movie, I was always thinking like, there's something weird about that dad. That's going to come back, but I don't know what it is. And then once the big, you know, quote unquote reveal happens about him, I was like, oh yeah, I actually knew that. I just didn't know that I knew
of
that.
Of course.
So that was kind of funny.
Oh boy.
So no, yeah. I had never seen it.
Yeah.
Although I have to say, since I've seen so many other films by these two guys involved in it, I felt like I had seen it before, even though I never had. But no, never seen it. So.
Well, I am, you know, never mind dead silence. I'm dead excited to talk about this movie. And I think we're going to get right into it. So we're going to spoil it after the trailer, after you hear the trailer. Although, if this was on a top 10 YouTube playlist, I think I would put it on top 10 twists that if you thought about this movie for 1 second, you would have seen coming from the very opening frame. Because, yeah.
But are also impossible.
But are also not possible at all. So yeah, we're going to spoil this one and head to doesthedogdie.com as always to check out any scary triggering parts. I will let you know if you're one of our listeners that likes to watch the movie before listening to this, definitely check it out. It is zany. It's more zany than like scary or creepy. Like, there's some gore and some spooky parts. I think it fits in with this is an actually scary movie, but it's
barely.
It's also very silly. It's very silly. So I don't think you have too much to worry about. But check out doesthedogdie.com. Anyway, you can probably tell I'm so excited. So let's get into the trailer and then into the plot rundown synopsis.
Jamie?
There's an old ghost story around here about a woman named Mary Shaw.
The ventriloquist who lost her voice. Back when I was a boy, a little boy went missing.
There was only ever one suspect, Mary Shaw.
She was murdered.
The men cut out her tongue.
And this town has been plagued by death ever since. Families found without their tongues.
She was buried with her doll collection.
The children, as she called them.
Somebody dug them up. All 100 of them.
They came back. They didn't stay dead.
She's here.
Beware the stare of Mary Shaw. She had no children, only dolls.
Destroy the doll!
And if you see her, do not scream. Or she'll rip your tongue out at the seam.
Okay. Dead Silence is a 2007 American supernatural horror film directed by James Wan and written by Lee Whannell. The film stars Ryan Quanten as Jamie Ashen, a young widower returning to his hometown to search for answers to his wife's death. It also stars Amber Valletta, Donnie Wahlberg, and Bob Gutton. It's not a very good synopsis.
An A-list cast, let me tell you. What was his name? Ryan Quanten? He's gone on to do what? Nothing. Sorry, buddy.
I mean, like,
wasn't
he could have
True
been
Blood?
Cast in...
Maybe. I don't know. I didn't watch True Blood.
Yeah, me neither.
I think he should have been cast in The Hitcher. He looked like he was good.
Yes.
For that role.
Oh my God. I also called him. We said he looked like a young knockoff Patrick Swayze. Like he kind of had that vibe. But
like I can't believe like he should have been like in every he should have been cast as like every kind of soft spoken nice guy from 2005 to 2010 in every yeah. movie in that era.
Oh, absolutely. Which was probably what happened where they're like, okay, we had The Hitcher, we had this, we need another guy like that. And
who's our next Ryan Quanten?
Who's our next Ryan Quanten? You could be the next Ryan Quanten. Anyway, okay, yeah. Luke, you picked it. Mm. Give us your initial thoughts.
Okay, well, as we alluded to, this month's theme is movies that are actually scary. And I think this movie does count, mm-hmm. although I'm willing to say it just crosses the threshold. Because even though there are a lot of scary parts, to me, every single one of them was typecast and telegraphed. And like there was like a chalk outline of a scare, and the scare went and laid down in each one of them.
Yes.
So we've talked about this before, like, with some of these movies, the creepy ones, like, there's always that first order of fear, which is like that in the moment, in the experience. It's like, oh, I don't like that. Oh, it's creepy sounds, creepy music. The editing is making it so it's a little scarier, that kind of thing. And then the sound drops out. Oh, there's the monster. Oh, yeah. It is creepy.
Yeah.
But there's like nothing in this movie that's second order scary for me. You know, once I reflect on it, it actually probably gets less scary than more. So, but I yep. still think it counts. So. Mm-hmm. I only bring that up to put it to rest.
Sure. How are you going to put it to rest with all its ventriloquism dummies?
So yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, I thought that this movie had everything around it to be a really great, scary movie, and it just didn't quite hit it out of the park. Mm. I thought that the settings were great. I thought that the creepy, like, I think the environment was really good. The hospital, the theater, the houses, so like a big sets, mansion. Yeah. Yeah, the insane sets, like all of these old, like kind of first half of the 20th century kind of cultural motifs around. So I just thought, I think this movie is like let down a little bit by the acting and the kind of implausibility of a lot of what's happening between Jamie and Donnie Wahlberg's character. So I think that there was a lot of really, like, the dolls are so cool. They look mm-hmm. awesome.
Yes.
But like the movie tells you what it's about, like from the moment that ventriloquist doll shows up, like mm-hmm. after it shows up and kills Lisa, I think her name was, or whatever his wife's name was. And then it's like, he sees Raven's Fair, Mary Shaw. Well, guess what the end of the movie is? Mary Shaw. It's like, Mary Shaw. It's like a connect the dots, but all the dots are in a straight line. So yep. it's not a movie that the plot is like particularly satisfying. Mm-hmm. But I will say this it has a lot of merits. They're like, James Wan loves his flashing red lights. I don't know why people stay where there's just these massive flashing red lights, although it makes for a cool movie effect, you know?
Yep.
Like, the Mary Shaw, the ghost of her, is like, oh, that's where they got the idea for the Insidious lady. Like,
yep. Oh my God, absolutely.
Like this movie is kind of just a pastiche of everything that they were going to do in other movies later that also was edited like Saw. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And also had Donnie Wahlberg, Saw, too. So, yeah. So honestly, this is kind of like a, I feel like almost it's like a James Wan Lee Winnell greatest hits without any of the great hits in it kind of thing. But it was fun. I enjoyed it. There was a great scene near the end when they're in the with all the dolls. And there's one panning shot and you see the Jigsaw doll sitting on the ground in front. So it's like, oh, okay, like these guys know how to masturbate.
They know what's up. Yeah.
And so I enjoyed all that. I think this movie I liked more than I probably would have if I didn't know anything about James Wan or Lee Winnell, but because I did, sure. I understood mm-hmm. a lot of their like little things going on. But as far as the movie goes, a little bit scary, crosses the threshold. Not that great of a movie, but probably fun to talk about.
But a lot of fun to talk about. Yeah, absolutely. I think we had this I should give her credit where it's due. Kelly had this realization while we were watching it where she was like, this is like if somebody took a Goosebumps novel and made a like big budget movie about it, like
yeah, that's true.
It's so over the top and so fantastical. Like you said, the sets, this like, there's this amazing set piece of this old abandoned theater that's on the edge of a lake that you have to row to get to, and there's smoke and fog and like just cobwebs and trees. Like, what the hell? Like, it's the same architect who built that hospital on the edge of a cliff in Malignant. Like, it was just so, there's so much to look at and so much to just sort of see. That the acting,
great over the top car shots,
a
la The Shining with the score, it was cool.
The scene transitions from like a map, kind of Indiana Jones, like a map with a dot on it, and then that transitions into the car. Or there's one where he's looking at a picture, like a drawing of Raven's Fair, and it like zooms in, and then you see there's something moving on the bridge, and it's still like drawn, and then that transitions into him driving into town. It's just like, oh my god, like there's so much to look at, and the plot, is so. Mystery for a 12-year-old, but if you're not 12 years old, you can see everything coming. And that's why it felt like a Goosebumps book, where it's like, that's like the twist of this movie is exactly how 98% of Goosebumps novels end, where it's like, it's not what you thought, but actually it's exactly what you thought if you read the first chapter. Like, in terms of, you said Mary Shaw, it was, the paper bag had a note that said, Mary Shaw is possessing these dummies, do not eat. And Michael looks in the bag and goes, well, I don't know what I was expecting. Like, it's just... and I fucking loved it. Like, I loved Malignant. James Wan, like, exactly what you said, Luke. I know what James Wan is doing. I know what he's about. And he's just having fun making a movie. And, like, I think that's great. It does not make one hot iota of sense, and it doesn't matter. Like, compared to, like, Oculus last week, where they tried to explain so much that it completely fell apart because you're like, well, you tried to explain it, but it was still incomprehensible. James Wan is like, this doesn't make sense. Enjoy, y'all. And you're like, okay. Like,
look at these creepy eyes looking at you.
The creepy eyes. The acting was like in such a way where you're like, I am smarter than literally every person in this movie, and that's, I'm okay with it. I fully think that Donnie Wahlberg was like, yeah, I'm gonna be shaving in every scene, what are you gonna do about it? And they were just like, well, we can't take it away from him, he won't act without it. Like, he just has this fucking pocket electric razor that he's just like, hey, yo,
but his beard is never shaved.
Yeah,
but it's just, he always still has like major stubble all the time.
It was just the choices were just, oh man, chef's kiss, just like real chef's kiss. But we'll get into all of it. Alex, how about you? What did you think of this one? Did you like it? Did you hate it?
I thought that out of all the either James Wan solo or Lee Whannell or the duo of them movies, this was probably in the lower pits of them, of the ones that we did.
Okay, sure.
Felt very Saw 2.
Is it worse than
me.
Saw 2?
It's not as bad as Saw 2, but it was like close to Saw 2, probably because of Donnie Wahlberg. But this movie, if I'm to think about it, I think the comparison, or like the way, Billy, you thought about Oculus last week in terms of it, like you really like, what's his name?
Mike Flanagan,
yeah. Right? Like, you thought, oh, like, this was an earlier Mike Flanagan movie. He probably learned from it and grew from it. And that's probably how I felt about Dead Silence. Like, I really like Conjuring and, you know, Malignant. And then this one had a lot of those kinds of things that made those movies great. Like, you know, the red light, the really great music, just like in Saw. I really like the music in this movie. It was like it was like the very early, it felt like an early Lee Whannell, James Wan movie, where it's just like, this is not that great of a movie, but then in the context of like looking at, you know, their future
His
movies,
whole canon. Yeah.
Yeah, you can kind of appreciate where this one maybe started a lot of cool ideas. But if I'm just looking at this movie, I don't think it was a very good movie.
Fair enough.
I think the acting was terrible. The story was so dumb.
Yeah.
And you know, it was scary. Like, there were times where I was sitting with my knees up to my chin, and, you know, but, you know, it had everything a bad horror movie has, right? Like, characters mm-hmm. doing stupid things, mm-hmm. knowing they're doing stupid things, but doing them anyway.
The most
and
obvious
traps. I think just because, like, it's a James Wan and Lee Winnell movie, it doesn't forgive, like, I can't forgive a movie for doing those things, right? Like,
sure.
It had a lot of the quick edits that were all the rage in the 2000s.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. A lot of really shaky zoom ins where they just cut out frames and it's just like, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I liked parts of this movie, but then there were, like, so many things about this movie. Like, there were so many bad horror movie tropes in this movie that I couldn't ignore.
Sure.
So, yeah, I had a very, very average time watching this movie. But I will say it did meet the scary threshold.
Nice. Yeah. Same here. So we get those three scaries from the team.
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let me be, like, really crystal clear that, like, I absolutely do not think this movie was good, but I had fun watching it. Like, those two pieces of my mind. I mean, it sounds like you had more of just an average kind of, like, eye-rolly time watching it, Alex. But yeah, I can also see that if you're just like, you're like, okay.
Well, yeah,
I know what you're doing, James Wan, but, like, maybe write a story that hangs together at all. Just for fun.
I feel like, maybe for context, if people haven't seen this movie, even though it's not exactly like these other movies, it's in the same kind of horror genre as, like, maybe A Nightmare on Elm Street or even some of the Evil Dead movies, which are crazy and silly and, like, a little bit scary, but also, like, you can't watch this movie without feeling like every part of their tongue is in their whole cheek while they're doing this.
Actually, it was out like of this, it, right?
Well, not all their tongues. It's a lot of their tongues were removed.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this movie is so cheeky with playing with what... And it's like, when that happens, it's like, at least if it's bad or silly, you kind of know that they're doing these things on purpose, which kind of takes the sting out of ineptitude for me a little bit, and more like, I don't know, like, I feel like it's inspired a little bit more by those campy type of films. Like, it's hard to exactly say this is a campy movie, but it's like a 2000s version of a campy film.
It felt 80s, though. Feel like it had 80s sensibility. Yeah,
but it also, like, the editing is clear of, like, what, like, 5-year window it was in when it came out, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I definitely think you're right, though, Alex. Like,
yeah,
it's
now, Luke, did you say
it's not the best effort?
Right. Did you say it reminds you of Nightmare on Elm Street because that's literally the reason that Mary Shaw is, you know, the same reason that Mary Shaw is hunting down people? Because, like, Freddy Krueger got, like, you know, he was a bad guy. He did his murders, and then a bunch of families got together and killed him. And so he was like, I'm going to kill all your relatives. And this was, like, exactly what Mary Shaw's deal was.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that, but yeah.
What, like, was Mary Shaw's deal? She wanted to make the perfect doll?
Yeah.
When she was alive or when she was dead?
I mean, feel like it. Well, when she was dead, she just wanted revenge, right?
She just wanted revenge.
And when she was alive, she wanted to make the perfect doll. So was.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was Michael her first kill?
Yes.
Okay.
Michael and Ashen was her first kill.
Was he wasn't part of the perfect doll. Did she just kill him because he was a little dweeby kid that yells in a theater? Yeah. Don't yell in theaters. This is not an audience participation show. Shut the fuck up. You're
watching a dummy, yeah.
And you might get your tongue ripped out and your eyes kind of stitched in and out at the same time.
Yeah, I think that's the important lesson. It's like when you're watching someone perform, this is not a participation thing, right? That's just watch. Yeah. If you like it, you like it. If not, you go home and bitch about it or start a podcast.
Like, that is such a symbol of childhood, is to not to not know that you kind of need to suspend some disbelief. It's like kids, they're not all kids, but there are some kids who think that it's like, it's actually, like, virtuous to point out what's going on behind the curtain. Like, I see through this and I'm going to tell you because I know that kind of thing. Where it's like, when you get a bit older, even if you know how a magician does their sleight of hand, it's like bad tact and etiquette to point it out, you know, that kind of thing. Like, you just keep the illusion going for the fun of it. Whereas kids think that they're, like, really ahead of the game to do that, and it's like, you know,
I can't believe no one else is saying this. Yeah,
that's like a socializing thing, and it's just funny because it's, I mean, the Michael Asher or Ashen, was it Ashen. Asher or Ashen?
Ashen. Ashen? Ashen, yeah.
He was probably a little too old to be like that. Like, he looked like he was about 12, and that's more like a slightly younger kid. But yeah, you know, I have to say, it was crazy to me that these townspeople killed Mary Shaw, because this is a small town, and without any like major performance acts, these people had nothing to cheer. Thought I'd drop it early. Keep you on your toes.
Thanks. Thank you.
But yeah, it did feel like a bit of an overreaction on Mary Shaw's part to kill him.
Kill a child, yeah.
Because he was a smartass at her show.
Right. Well, that's the thing. It's like, she needs a reason to be making a making dolls. I guess she's just like passionate about ventriloquism. Okay. And then this kid was mean to her. So, murder. And you're like, whoa, okay, Mary. What a shift. What a cosmically, like, massive escalation that you picked. And I think her whole deal was she loved making ventriloquism dummies. Everyone needs a hobby. Nothing wrong with that. But then it became like a pathology with her, where it's like that was her obsession. And then, I don't know, everyone was just so accommodating. She was like, when she died, she wanted to be made into a doll. And the coroner's just like, or the mortician, that's the one. Mortician was just like, no problems here. All right, time to make you a doll, Mary.
That's
like,
so fucked up. Why?
Not an unreasonable request. I've done it many times.
Oh, you want the doll package? Yeah, no worries. You can just say combo A next time. It's totally fine. Yeah. We get it all the time.
Yeah.
Like, so insane. Why? Why, Mary?
And then she wants to be buried with all her dolls as well?
Yep.
Crazy.
Mm-hmm. But she made the perfect doll. She made the perfect doll.
She did make the perfect
so
doll.
So Ella was the perfect doll, right?
Yeah.
So is Ella ageless?
I think so. Well, I think she was... Okay, so the big twist of this movie is that obviously... Well, okay, so it's very clear there's something supernatural going on with Mary Shaw, who is possessing all these ventriloquism dummies and attacking people and killing them. And then we find out very later that... What's his name? Jamie's stepmom is... Mm-hmm. Very, very young stepmom, married to his dad, who, quotes, had a stroke 2 months ago and is confined to a wheelchair. So she is a doll that Mary Shaw is possessing. The spirit of Mary Shaw is possessing Ella. Is that her name?
Yeah.
Anna? Whatever.
Ella.
Stepmom. And then she made another dummy out of Jamie's dad and turned him into a ventriloquism dummy, but a person, which... was so dumb and so obvious. From the second he shows up, he's like, hello, it's me sitting on a little chair with a little bow tie. And I was like, I have to hand it to Bob Gunton, though, who I recognize as the warden from Shawshank. That's where I knew him from. Mm-hmm. He did a great job acting like a marionette or like a ventriloquism dummy. Just the way he like would move his head around and he's looking up at her. Just it looked like
did you call it a ventriloquism dummy.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I was like, he's a doll. She's controlling him. She's possessed by Mary Shaw? That was the only one I was shaking on. But I was like, oh, yeah, I called it like straight away. I was like, that guy's not alive. He's dead. He's a dummy. And boy, oh, boy, was he.
I feel so stupid because I looked at him the whole time. And I was like, he looks not alive. Like, he looks
weird.
Pallid and like sallow. His cheeks are so not a normal color. I was like, man, this guy is really like not.
But see, I
was thinking that he was like involved with it somehow, not that he was
a victim.
A victim, yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah, no, it was.
Okay, so when Mary Shaw had the 101 dolls, and then if you destroy all the dolls, then in theory, her spirit cannot possess anything anymore, right?
True.
And she would have died.
Dolls somehow. In the
but there's. Yeah. So. There were actually 102 dolls because Ella was a doll as well, the final doll.
Yeah.
So
I think so.
If Ella dies, then Mary Shaw dies with it.
Yeah.
Okay. I think so.
All right. Yeah. Well, also I read up on a little bit and there was a did either of you watch the extended cut or just the theatrical? I think I just watched the theatrical one.
I watched whatever was on UK Netflix because that's what had it. So,
okay.
I don't know.
But yeah, apparently there's an alternate ending, which I read it, it's just not as good as this ending, actually.
What do we got? Do us a favor. Read us the actual ending and then the alternate ending.
Okay, well,
we'll let the listeners decide.
Okay, the actual ending is where Jamie goes back home and learns that his dad is dead and is a doll, and Ella is controlled by Mary Shaw, and who is the perfect doll. And he screams, and she rips or kills or apparently rips. I don't know. Something happens, and that's how the movie ends, right?
Poor Jamie. Hey, if only he had turned that one little page earlier in the movie and seen a picture of Ella, and then he would have known.
All right.
All right, and then it ends with, like the portraits of all the actors as ventriloquists and dummies. Right. Okay,
yeah.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. So alternate ending, which I think is not as good, but it says, in an alternate ending, Ella simply knocks Jamie out after he discovers his father was a puppet all along. Then she explains that the original Ella was a human being with Edward as an abusive husband. Edward knocks her down the stairs and killed their unborn child. Ella dug up the grave where the puppet Billy was buried and became possessed by Mary Shaw. Afterwards, Ella makes a family photograph and then, dressed as Mary Shaw, tells a bedtime story to a child by candlelight, later revealed to be a traumatized and brainwashed, yet very much still alive, Jamie, with his voice removed or tongue ripped out. Or it would have had the added effect planned. The story is the poem. Ella also reveals the only silence can save you from Mary Shaw. Then she blows out the candle, ending the film. So it was a lot more of a human element without Ella being with Ella being a real person who just gets abused by the dad, and then when she digs up the doll, becomes possessed by Mary Shaw. Which I, when I read that, I was like, I'm glad that's the alternate not shown ending, because that ending sucks.
Yeah, I agree.
I think this ending is much better.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, I think that this ending that we had is, you know, obviously Jamie wasn't going to make it out of this movie because, and I said this more than one time, he was the biggest dummy in this entire movie. He was, like, nobody in this movie was less aware of their surroundings. I think in almost any movie we've done, you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody who was, like, more oblivious than Jamie in this movie because, oh, damn. Just every single thing that was like, Jamie, this is a trap for you. Don't do it. He's like, I'm going there. That's that's where I want to be. I want to be in that action right now.
At the end of the day, his only motive was to figure out why his wife died, right?
Yeah.
You know, like, I feel like there's, like, the mini twist and then the big twist in every one of Lee Winnell's movies. Like, so the mini twist was, like, the reason Mary Shaw killed Lisa at the start is because she was pregnant with a baby.
Jamie's baby.
Yeah, which, you know.
The next Ashen.
Yeah, which wasn't really a huge twist because it's kind of, it was like, it was so fucking put out on a platter for you that she was, like, pregnant at the start of the movie, right? Like,
she's like, oh, you got us a baby.
You got us a baby. They talk about babies the whole time. And then she, like, puts, like, the blanket underneath her shirt to see what it looked like if she was pregnant. When he comes back with the Chinese food, he takes out two sodas from the fridge.
Yeah, no beers. Yeah.
So it's like, okay, of course she was pregnant. So that part was not, like, the little twist was not a twist. And then the other twist where, you know, dad was a puppet. You know, all of us could see that he was in on it somehow, right?
Yeah. Did you call like the big twist that he was a puppet? Like, Luke missed it. I or like knew something was up. I was like on there right away. But did you, what did you, were you surprised by the twist?
I didn't call it, but I was like 0% surprised when it was revealed to be that, because it's like,
oh, sure.
You look back on all the scenes, like, and then it, this is like, just like in Saw, they do the flashbacks but from like different camera angles, so it's like Ella's hand was behind dad the whole time, you know, of course she was like doing that, and it was zero surprise at all.
I'm glad they cut out a scene of Jamie getting in and being like, geez, dad, you smell like rotting cadaver meat, and you know, it's like he's just cut open in the back with a stick, like moving his head around. It's like, that must smell terrible. What are you doing? What's going on here?
Yeah.
So, okay. Protagonist, our hero, our dumbest motherfucker in the movie. Oh, boy.
I wouldn't say he's the dumbest motherfucker in the movie. I thought Donnie Wahlberg was the dumbest motherfucker in the movie.
Okay.
Like,
well, except for the parts where he was saying, yeah, you're telling me the doll's possessed? I was like, yeah, that actually is the right response.
Yeah, no, but then it's like, I don't know. He's supposed to be this, like, homicide detective, right? Who's, like, hard ass. But then Jamie just, like, resists arrest and runs away from him. And he's like, okay, I guess I'll let you run away and I'll slowly chase after you in my car. Don't go too far, though, because I don't have a full tank of gas. And when he sees Jamie at the theater, it's like, you know, if you were a real homicide detective and your prime suspect just ran away from you, you just arrest him right away and bring him out of there. He's like, you know what? Yeah. You're right, Jamie. I will follow you into this theater.
See,
Donnie.
That's funny.
Dumbass.
Yeah. Donnie Wahlberg. I love the Wahlberg acting of like, so wait, you're telling me the doll is possessing people? Like, he's just like, they're so bewildered in all their movies. Like, anytime you watch it, especially like when I think that Mark Wahlberg is in a couple of the Transformers movies, he's always like, you're some kind of transforming robot? What's going on? Like, he's just always confused. And Donnie was doing that to a T. But I was actually on Donnie Wahlberg's side, you know, perish the thought. But I was like, yeah, Jamie is allowed to go back to a crime scene unescorted, take evidence without, like, knowing, leave town. You know, he's prime suspect for this murder. And he's saying, like, no, I didn't do it. The doll did it. And then just is allowed to, like, traipse free. Of course Donnie Wahlberg is mad. He fucked up. He shouldn't have ever been left alone.
tries to bury the evidence. When Donnie Wahlberg recovers the evidence, he steals the evidence back. Is that not reason enough just to arrest his ass already? Quit following this motherfucker around. Just arrest him.
Right? It's like, wait a minute. I gotta get to the bottom of this. There's something up with this doll. And it's just, it's so, ugh. Oh my God. I was like, oh, Donnie Wahlberg, what are you doing in this movie?
I mean, he had a lot of shotgun shells. He shot a lot of dolls in there.
He's trying. Is that what he said? I'm trying?
I'm trying. Yeah. I'm trying. Another scene that happens towards the end when you see that, I guess there's like a big clown puppet that is also possessed, but they're all looking at these rows and rows of glass cases of these dolls, and like one row starts looking to the side and then turning its head, and they're like, what could they be looking at? And so they look to the next row of dolls, and they're also turning their head and looking to the side. And they're like, oh, that's weird. And they go down like five rows of dolls. I'm like, just look at the end. Look at the end. Like, what? Look to that side. Don't keep going doll by doll. Obviously. You guys. You guys. there's so many times in this movie where I was like, come on. Try a little bit. Use one part of your brain.
Well, I mean, yeah. It'd be tough to be killed by dolls, but these guys figured out a way.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a good point. Like, if you're, you know, knock, knock, knock on the door of your house, you get looked down. There's a package that has a ventriloquism dummy in it. What is your first response? Because mine is setting it on fire right away. Like, no, thank you. I don't want to deal with it. Like, not interested.
Did they even try to address who sent that to him?
No. It was Ella. Like Ella did it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Or I guess Mary Shaw, but.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Actually, because they didn't send it. They dropped it off.
Deleted it. Oh, right, okay.
There's no postage.
It's true.
Yeah.
No postage.
Good point.
Okay, so what do you do if that doll shows up on your doorstep?
Okay, so if it's at my doorstep, I see a big box. Obviously, someone dropped it off because there's no postage. And then I see it is addressed to me. So if it's addressed to me, I would open it, right? If it wasn't addressed to me, I don't know if I'd open it. But it was at my door. I don't know. I might still open it. I'll open it. And you know, I see it's like, it's a ventriloquist doll. And I'm like, oh, I don't like this. I don't really want it. So I would maybe just put it back outside for the next
Okay, here's
just put it in the lobby of your apartment. Be like,
here's another example of how stupid Jamie is. So it's later revealed in the movie that Jamie is from is his hometown is this Ravens Fair town where mm-hmm. this story of Mary Shaw is so famous,
so
and
famous.
Well known, and
yeah, everyone knows
it's
it.
About a ventriloquism doll and murders, and people know about it. And he grew up in this town, but he still looks at this ventriloquism doll. Mm-hmm. And then later, after Lisa's dead, he rips down the thing. It's like, oh my gosh. This is from my hometown. I was like, you didn't fucking know that before because of all the things you already know about this story that we learn about?
Like, you know the poem.
It was like a revelation. It was a revelation for him. And then he's like, But then we learned that this is like the most famous story from his hometown. It's like,
well, yeah,
you're fucking stupid.
Well, and then also, like, once he goes to his hometown, and who's the new mortician?
Coroner?
Yeah.
Mortician, yeah. That old guy, Harry, or whatever his name was.
Henry, yeah. And Henry talks about how we have all these, stories of people's tongues being ripped out and posed in weird kind of ways.
Family pose.
Yeah.
Yep.
And this happened, like, way in the past. So Jamie, knowing this information, should have been like to Donnie Wahlberg, hey, look at all this weird shit that's happened, and there's evidence about it, and it's happened before I was born, and all this stuff.
And it's exactly like how Lisa's dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shouldn't you look into it this way? Like, he's, like, when he gets released by Donnie at the start of the movie, he's like, I'll do your job for you, or something. He says something fucking stupid. Yeah. So he does like, the
I'm
job,
do
but
job
does not
you.
Bring yeah. the job evidence yeah. to...
He only...
Oh, my God.
He does the job, but then doesn't sign the timeout card.
Yeah.
Doesn't
yeah.
get credit
exactly.
for it.
Yeah. Well, and like, just like, obviously they need the doll in lots of scenes to be scary because the doll is scary. But Jamie, okay. You have to go back to Raven's Fair to check out what's going on. Fine. I will accept that. Why did you, why is the dummy riding shotgun?
Yeah, motherfucker, have you heard of a trunk?
Why is it sitting in your seat? Put it in your trunk. Put it in a box, like, put a chain around that box. What are you doing, friend? Like, he's just like, you know what would be funny? A little passenger. I can ride in the carpool lane now. It's like, my guy, obviously this is just going to be scary. What are you doing? But, you know, he does fit in. You said that quiet, nice guy aesthetic from 2005 to 2010 by having just a classic car with no reason. Just got a classic car. It's got no power windows or steering or anything, but
just a nice red car.
Looks good. Yeah, nice red car. Yeah. So, yeah. This was like a love letter to poor decision making, if I can borrow that phrase. Oh, one thing I did like, a nice touch, a nice little horror history touch, is the theater, which we can talk about that set piece because it's bananas. It was called the Guignol Theater, which I had learned about recently as like that being the origin of how horror production sort of came around in the sort of late 19th century. These Guignol theaters would be like little short stories with jump scares and music and tension building. And that's where a lot of DNA in horror movies still exists. Mm. And so obviously it's James Wan knowing like where he comes from and is like, I'm going to put this in there for the real fans. And so I was just very pleased to see. I got to give him his props to that. Love me a little Guignol theater reference.
Props is a good word because that's like one of the best parts of this film is the props.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. You know, like, like we say, even when a horror movie sucks, the props are usually pretty good. And just all of the, I mean, first and foremost, the dolls are just awesome. Like, they look so good. There's just the right color scheme of them with the way that their cheeks and their eyes are so like illuminating. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They're so bright and vibrant, and that contrast against like the kind of paleness of their skin mm-hmm. is just so creepy. And then like their mouths, I don't know, like I was just like, this is such a good idea. It kind of, like I said at the very beginning, like I kind of wanted a better movie because of how much around it there was. Like the sandbox mm-hmm. there was like 100 awesome state-of-the-art toys all at the corners of this sandbox. And unfortunately it just was like, let's go in the middle and just dig with our hands.
Yeah. We're having fun. You can see all the cool stuff around, but we're not going to touch any of it. Yeah. And like, I really liked, again, speaking of James Wan sort of DNA, the opening credits where they're building the ventriloquism dummy and just sort of watching that process. Like, he loves like a table setting opening credits. Yeah. I think they do that in Malignant as well. They do a great job.
Yeah. And I bet you if you watch these credits again, you get the whole movie spoiled for you. Like you could if you watch the Malignant credits properly.
Yeah. It's like, here's the movie. You can leave now. If you don't want to watch this anymore, audience members, you can go. You've got the story. But yeah, just like the crafting of these dolls, I find ventriloquism dummies intensely creepy. I don't like them. They're like on a level of clowns because it's like, it's an uncanny valley thing. They're always kind of like weird and, you know, they have been portrayed as haunted spirits in, you know, pop culture for so long that it's just like, yeah, if somebody was like, I'm a serious ventriloquist with a serious dummy, I'd be like, not for me, friend. Not like, good job with mastering a skill, but no thank you.
It's just, it's like evil Pinocchio.
Well, it's very clear Mary Shaw did not master the skill because Henry could see her lips moving.
Yeah. Well, except also, though, like when Billy the doll gets pretty angry at Michael and she's like trying to calm him down, there's a part of me is like, well, maybe the doll's already possessed and it actually is kind of got a part of her spirit in it. Mm-hmm. And she's not ventriloquizing that. Like,
is that,
you know,
is that the
like,
verb?
I guess so.
Sure.
Like, it doesn't really matter to the story, but you know that scene where she's, like, arguing with the doll? She's like, let's move on, Billy's like, no, I'm going to show him, kind of thing.
And there's overlapping chatter. Like, they're talking kind of at the same time, which I thought was
there
cool.
Was like there's like, oh, maybe the doll's already possessed, even while she's still alive. Like, maybe she's already in this process. I don't know exactly how this stuff works. I've never done it before, but I assume if you're going to possess dolls, you could. There's no reason you couldn't start while you're still alive, right?
Sure. I mean, you just got to practice.
Yeah,
just like any other skill. This movie had so much to look at. It had so many things to look at, and that if you listened to what they were saying, it falls down. But when you're just looking at it, it's like, okay, this all looks cool. I thought the makeup on Mary Shaw was especially effective, especially when she was deceased and when they made her into a doll. That's a nightmare. And I don't know why young Henry is like, I'm waking up in the middle of the night. You know what I'm gonna do? Go down to the morgue and check out this dead lady. Like, there's no reason for any of that, but it is, it's like you said, a chalk outline of a scare. And it said, Henry, it says in the script you have to go downstairs and look at the old lady. And he's like, why would I do that? And they're like, tap script says it right here, buddy. Yeah. In you and go.
You have to be just heavy enough and just lean far enough to tip the table on top of you.
Right.
Never mind, coffins are not light.
Wasn't the purpose of that, though, just to show that Mary Shaw will spare you if you don't scream?
Yes, it was. Yeah.
So there was a purpose. That what I thought was completely unnecessary to the movie and zero need and completely, like, could have cut out, like, a good 10 minutes out of this movie was all the Marion scenes.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what was the
point
of her?
What was her deal?
Nothing.
Well, just the, she's the, you know, the kind of brain dysfunctional true warning, you know, like she actually was warning everybody about Mary Shaw, but she's unreliable because she's
she hides underneath the floorboards.
I thought that scene must have influenced Shyamalan from The Visit.
Had to have but you're right, like Marion is just this like stereotypical crazy old lady who's like muttering, she's talking to a stuffed crow. And she's the only one who's actually saying what's really going on. And everyone's like, don't listen to crazy Mary, Marion. She's crazy Marion. We don't listen to her. And she's like, actually, you're all going to die if you keep this up. And
she had a pet
like,
magpie, oh, right? Or was that a crow?
Crazy Marion. It was a crow. Yeah. And she was just there to be ignored and to have Henry need to go into the creepy basement on multiple times, right? Like we get that first scene where he goes in because she's hiding, she's scared. And then the second time, I guess Ella is throwing her voice to sound like Marion to lure him down there so that he can get tongue grabbed. And then, is there a third time? Like, I don't really know. But she's just there to be a stereotypical crazy old lady in a horror movie that like, hey, kids, you should listen to the people who society has cast aside or whatever. It's just, okay, sure.
She's going to go, now she has to go live in that huge hospital by the seaside in Malignant.
I think you mean Cliffside.
Cliffside.
She's there, and then they close it down, and they're like, well, we don't know what she's going to do.
She was like examples of more over-the-topness. Like, this movie is so, I believe the kids say extra.
It was.
I think that, yeah.
Hashtag she was, extra.
She was definitely part of that. Mm-hmm. Young Henry was the actor was I recognize him. I think his name's Keir Gilchrist.
Oh, what do you recognize him from?
Well, he's in the Netflix show Atypical, which is a really like wholesome and nourishing show about a family who the main character has autism.
Oh, yes.
Spectrum, yeah. And it's like a really, you know, feel good type of show. I like it. But he also did I can't remember the movie. Maybe it's called the Good Neighbor. But it's like a him and another guy kind of basically like try to haunt this guy's house, and his name's James, like it's a James Caan is the guy. Anyway, it just was like, oh, that could be a movie we do sometime, because it's like,
oh, interesting,
kind of a scary movie. And I can't, it's like a kind of a found footage, but it's all through the security cameras they set up in the house to like try to pretend to haunt this guy by, anyway,
using It Follows as well.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Oh, that's, okay.
He was one of the friends, I think.
Paul.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, I thought he did a great job. I thought he looked remarkably like the old version of Henry. Like, they did a great job casting him to have, like, similar facial features, similar, like, you know, structure. Obviously, Henry's much, much older when we see him in the present time or the contemporaneous time when the movie set. But I was like, oh, that's like a nice subtle bit of acting where it's like, yeah, I can totally see how this kid grew up to be this old man and like see how that works. And, you know,
yeah,
obviously he's a suspenders man for life. No belts for him. Forget about it. Yeah. Only suspenders.
You want to talk about Mary Shaw's tongue?
Ooh.
Let's talk about Mary Shaw's tongue. Let's kick us off, Alex.
It's long what and slimy. Got? It's kind of gross. That was probably the grossest part of the movie when she like licks Jamie.
Wait, what? There's a scene where she licks Jamie?
I think it's through the clown doll, right? Because like the clown doll says, come closer, I'll whisper it to you. And Jamie, being the sophisticate that he is like, you know what? I'm just going to go put my face right beside this doll.
Yeah, I want to know the secret of why you murdered my wife, crazy demon-possessed doll. Okay, I'll lean close. And then he gets licked. And it's kind of gross. It's pretty gross. Okay. It was the grossest part of the movie.
I definitely... I remember the scene with the clown, and I think I was writing down a note to the effect of, like, come on, Jamie, this is... Oh, yeah, here it is. Come on, Jamie, this is an obvious trap. And he...
Yeah, like, yeah. Okay, so I missed. You never want to blame the victim. You never want to blame the victim.
Nah,
but
I'm blaming Jamie.
Jamie makes it hard not to blame the victim in this movie. So,
just like, come here, I'll whisper it. No, get closer, Jamie. And like that was another point where Donnie Wahlberg was actually in the right, where he's like, what are you doing? Stop it.
Yeah. He's got to know the truth. The truth is out there.
The truth is out there.
Yeah. And that tongue. I mean, that's a.
It's gross.
You could do a lot of things with that tongue.
Well, here's a good question then. Would you rather know the truth and then die or live and not know the truth?
I mean, I think that's given the context of the film, it's like a little bit of a false choice, because in that moment, all those dolls are moving on their own. People are dead. Jamie thinks these dolls are possessed by Mary Shaw. He knows he's in trouble. Mm-hmm. It's like, now I'm going to put all my trust in you to not kill me when I put my head right beside this doll. Like,
yeah, but the doll said, come closer. I'll whisper it to you. Has to be telling the truth.
Yes. I guess.
Maybe the doll was going to tell him that there was another Skywalker. Like, we don't know that for sure until you go and check it out.
Come here, I'll whisper it to you. Palpatine actually survived.
I'd want to know the truth, but I'd also, like, not want to do it at the expense of my own life, which is, like, clearly what was happening.
I would at least try to negotiate. Where, like, I can actually hear you fine over here. Just tell me what you're going to tell me.
I'll come
like,
a little closer, but I don't think it needs to be a whisper, yeah.
Arms distance. You're talking at a great volume now. Just let's keep this going. He can hear. I don't mind if Donnie Wahlberg hears.
Yeah,
like that's
he's
fine.
Actually a good friend of mine.
It's great. We're buds. He had the motel room next to me.
He wanted to arrest me, but now he knows I was right in my outlandish supernatural story.
I told him that it was a doll that did it. Now he believes me. He'll be right back. He's just shaving real quick, but don't worry. Don't worry about him.
Speaking of that, I'll be right back.
Oh, great. Okay. I really thought that Donnie Wahlberg was going to die by that razor. Did you think they were setting something up for that? Like the amount of times he brought it out, buzz, buzz, buzz. I thought for sure he was getting his throat cut with that thing.
I mean, you think so, but then, it's a red herring. And then once you realize it was a red herring, it's like, why the fuck was he shaving the whole time anyway? And it's so fucking, like, it's gross, okay? You're like, do it over a sink. Do it over a trash can. He's just got little bits of his DNA everywhere. Like, what the
so
fuck?
Gross. Yeah, honestly, I couldn't see a reason why the way it ends is like when he dies because he falls off this scaffolding. Again, crazy sets. He falls off the scaffolding. Then he screams, and Mary Shaw like tackles him to get his tongue because she doesn't want to get it in the water. And then his razor just hits the ground and starts buzzing. And it's like, that's it? That was all it was? So probably one of the most disappointing red herrings I've experienced. I was like, I wanted that to be so much more.
Buzz, buzz.
Buzz, buzz.
Yeah. So that, I guess that was another problem I had with the movie, where I felt that Mary Shaw was kind of inconsistent to her character, unless she's just pure evil. But like, she, I guess I just answered my question. But her goal as dead Mary Shaw was just to enact revenge on the entire Ashen bloodline, right? But then she also...
And any, well, not just Ashen, just any family that was associated with it. Because that's why she... Like, it was, like, a bunch of families that got there, and that's why...
Yeah, but that was the entire...
Mortician, like... had to go, yeah.
Wait, what?
The Mortician was a different... Like, one of... Like, the Henry's... Henry? Yeah, Henry's dad was part of the posse that went and, like, killed her.
No, he wasn't.
And so she... Wasn't she? No. I thought that no, she wasn't in just going after Ashens. She was going after anybody who had a hand in it.
No, I was pretty sure that her vendetta was against the Ashen bloodline. So
okay.
Well,
all right.
Definitely that, but I think it was a crowd of people that killed
her. Yeah, but then the crowd of people were all the, like, if we're going back in the movie when Henry's like flashbacking to like what happened, wasn't it like it was like all the Ashen, hold on. Let me think. Yeah, it was like the extended Ashton family were the ones that lynched her and made her scream before they killed her.
Oh, okay. Okay, so again, it was a little bit unclear, but basically Mary had a vendetta. So I think that's your point. She has a vendetta
but
against
also
X
willing
number
to
people.
Kill other people not in her vendetta.
That was my problem with it, right? Like, okay, like maybe we'll have to clarify this, but I'm like 95% sure it was like the mob or the big crowd that like made her scream and then cut out her tongue and then lynched her was all extended Ashen family members.
Oh, okay.
That's I'm like 95% sure that's the case. So if that's the case, it makes sense that her vendetta is against the entire Ashen bloodline. But then she's also willing to, you know, kill anybody else,
just
including Henry
else.
And Donnie. Right. It's like anyone who screams when she sees them.
They're getting too close to the truth.
I don't.
Don't scream.
Yeah. So, you know, a little bit of inconsistency for me, but I guess.
Sure. Yeah. No, I can see that.
Yeah. Another kind of just like a Jigsaw. Problem with the villain. Inconsistent villain. But then if she's just pure evil, then I guess that answers my question. So.
Then sure.
Yeah.
Or maybe she initially was. Yeah, she's like, I'm just getting all these Ashens, and then maybe she's spooking about and somebody screams and she's like, oh, you screamed, I'll take your tongue too, and then was like, hey, let's take all these tongues. Yeah, see, I read it completely the other way, where I thought it was a Freddy Krueger situation where it was revenge on families and she had already got all the other families and the Ashens were the only ones who are left. And she was, I don't know, saving the best for Lashin or something. It was, yeah, but it...
Hold on, I pulled up the movie.
It made no sense. Oh, you got the movie. Okay.
Just keep talking. I'll find the scene.
Just go watch the movie. I really like, though, when he was falling off the scaffolding, the scream that he stifles before he hits the water. I thought that was, like, the only smart move he did, because he had just seen Donnie Wahlberg, who I think was only credited as detective. Like, he had no other name. But anyway, he saw him scream. Donnie Wahlberg's out. Bye-bye. And he is falling off the scaffolding and just, like, covers his mouth to stifle the scream. I was like, wow, Jamie, you did something smart.
Okay.
Too bad it's not even close enough.
So it's the soup scene where Jamie's demanding the truth from his dad.
Right.
And he goes, what does Michael Ashton and our family have to do with Mary Shaw?
Okay.
Fine. Verbatim.
When he was a boy, your great-uncle, Michael Ashton, vanished without a trace. For our family, there was only ever one suspect.
Right.
Mary Shaw. So they dealt their own justice. They forced her to scream. Then cut out her tongue.
So it was just the family Ashen.
That's what it is implied in the movie.
The hilarious thing from that scene, though, is it's actually Mary Shaw telling Jamie all that.
I guess so. Why would Mary Shaw lie?
She was so convinced she could, I don't know, get it?
Yeah.
Like, I don't, It doesn't matter. But, like, again, it's another James Wanism where it's like, I'm getting revenge on the people who wronged me. It's the same thing as when Malignant is, you know, going after all the doctors because he, you know.
Oh, wait, no, I skipped ahead four seconds.
Our family killed her.
Along with others from Raven's Fair. But she didn't stay dead.
So you are right, there are others.
Solve the mystery.
Solve the mystery, okay. Vendetta against everybody. That's why Raven's Fair became decrepit.
But if Henry's dad was part of the posse that killed her, that's kind of weird to be the mortician,
right?
Like, you go kill
I don't think he was part of it. Was he?
Well, then why did she kill Henry?
Because he screamed.
He must have been part of it.
Because we figured out that she does kill anybody that screams, because Donnie Wahlberg died, and he definitely wasn't a part of that.
The vendetta starts against the Ashen family, but then anyone else kind of caught in the web of this situation who's trying to help an Ashen, maybe, is also fair
complicit
game.
Okay,
maybe. Yeah. And then, like, it's throwing into new light the whole, my dad, her final wish was to be made into one of her dolls and buried, which is a piece of line that Henry delivers. But maybe he, you know, his dad just told him that because, like, yeah, she wanted to be made into a doll. He saw her by accident, and so he had to explain it. But it feels like maybe the families were like, "You love dolls so much, why don't we make you into one?" And he was like, "Listen, I'm a mortician. I know how to do that. That's actually really easy for
me. That's actually mortician 101.
Yeah, that's like first day mortician school. You eat your raw rabbit kidney, and then you're off making dummies.
Yeah, and then you doll them up.
So yeah. Maybe that's why Henry's family copped it, but also why let him get to be, you know, super duper old? It's like she's been having a vendetta for years.
Because
it's
never screamed his whole life.
Oh, he's so good.
Yeah.
Okay, that's why.
I would be the first one dead in this universe. I scream all the time. I scream when I play sports. We're playing dodgeball at like 7 p.m. in a gym with like 20 other people. Dodgeball comes straight at me. I scream. Mary Shaw just comes out, rips out my tongue before the ball hits me.
Straight
I'm
out
done.
Of the ball. All she'd have to do is make a rat doll.
Yeah.
Right?
There's rats in just a little, little rat face.
Like, it's so silly, the fact that she's, you know, it's like, I'm a supernatural villain who can possess dolls, but also I can't kill you unless you scream. I can't do it.
Yeah, that's
I can possess a
doll.
That's
such a strange rule to have to abide by, right? But I guess there's like maybe some symbolism that where she died when her tongue was ripped out, so she needs the voices of her victims. But like, why can't you do it when they're just talking? Why does it have to be screaming? Or is it because she died screaming as her tongue was ripped out? I don't know. There's so many unanswered questions, but I don't really care anymore.
Why didn't she have a vendetta against hecklers? You know, why isn't she going to comedy clubs and spotting people in the audience who are like, boo, you suck? And she's like, that guy's on my list. Fuck that guy.
Right?
It's hard to build things. Easy to tear them down, asshole.
Yeah. Do I come to your job and make fun of you? Anyway, I'm glad they set all the dolls on fire at the end. That was a very satisfying scene because, that's what you should have done from the jump. Just, what's this doll? Fire, and then throw it into a lake. End of.
And I'll have to say, like, some pretty terrible CGI.
Oh, my God, right? Where the face is shifting?
How bad was that? That was like Phantom Menace bad.
The fact that they did it once, I was like, ooh, that didn't look great. And then they're all like, you know what we need? Four more times.
Like, when the face comes out of the doll?
Yeah.
Oh, and Donnie shoots him?
Such bad CGI.
So it's so weird morphing, and because it was 2007, this is before they would just throw a 3D shot on a movie. You know, that period of cinema, you know, from 2010 to about 2016, when they were like, 3D, that's the wave of the future. Everyone's going to be buying 3D TVs. Yeah. No. Mm. No. Like, it felt too early for that, though, but I was just like, they're committing. They're committing to this bit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, two other problems that popped up in my head as I was watching this movie. Problem number one, the first time that Jamie goes to the theater, and, you know, it's, like, it's abandoned, and it's on this lake, and apparently you have to row across it now.
She's got to row across this lake.
There's no bridge, but someone left a boat.
Yeah, so so he rows across it, and then when you see him get into the boat, you only see one boat.
Yeah.
Right? So the second time he goes, at nighttime, and then Donnie Wahlberg is following him, it doesn't show Donnie Wahlberg getting into a boat and rowing across. So I was like, was there two boats? And then they answer that question. He's like, Henry was here. He called me. It's like, and then Donnie says, there's no one else here. There's only mine and your rowboat. It's like, so stupid. Such bad writing.
He brought his own rowboats.
He brought his own rowboat. Duh.
Okay. And then the second really dumb thing that happens is, like, immediately after this, as they're walking through the theater, Jamie turns and gives Donnie his lantern and says, hold this, and then walks away from him. And Donnie's like, what the fuck? So he follows him, and then you think there's, like, going to be a jump scare or something happens. It's no, Jamie's still there. They're walking, and he just hands his lantern back. It's like, I'll go first.
There you go. I held it. I'm done now.
So stupid and unnecessary. I didn't understand.
Is that when Jamie, like, walks behind?
Yeah, behind, like, the curtain or the wall or whatever. Yeah. Like, there's weird things that happen in movies that just make no sense, and there was, like, both of those back to back.
Man.
Yeah.
I have to say, Jamie and Detective had a ton of chemistry.
It was
believable. It was really believable.
It just became, like, this really bad buddy cop movie at the end.
Yeah.
But that, I don't know, that set really redeemed a lot of it for me. It was so bonkers, but...
Did you two catch Jigsaw Doll?
Yes,
in the one panel scene?
I didn't actually see it. What, he was one of the dolls?
No, it was
on the ground.
It's like one of the scenes on the ground where they, like, you know, they do all these close up of the dolls, and then there's one shot where it's, like, way behind them, and you see the whole, like, rack of dolls, and then the two of them, and then there's all that stuff between them, which is, like, there's, like, pillars and all these other things lying around. And you can very clearly see the Jigsaw doll just, like, sitting propped up against one of the pillars.
Ah, I want to see that now. Wasn't the doll in Jigsaw also called Billy the Puppet, though?
I don't think so. Billy? Mm. I don't think it was called Billy. I don't remember that.
Hmm. I can't look it up right now. My internet's not good enough, but I want to see this thing.
Jigsaw doll is...
I kind of thought it was just Jigsaw.
It's called Billy the Puppet.
Oh, nice job, Billy.
Thanks.
They don't say it in the movie, though. I'm pretty sure they don't say it.
It's just, like, something they notice. I want to look up this puppet thing here. So please talk. Please fill the silence. Jigsaw puppet in dead silence. Here we go.
You know what? As I, like, kind of read a little bit more about this movie.
Oh, yeah, there he is.
I think there's some, like, important context that helps me process how I feel about this movie. I really respect James Wan and Lee Whannell, but, like, as I said, like, this just wasn't a hit for them, in my opinion. But then apparently, so in the Wikipedia article, there's post-release commentary. So I'll read this little snippet. So in his personal blog, screenwriter Whannell reveals the origins of the film within the context of the Hollywood film industry. In a candid post entitled Dud Silence, the hellish experience of making a bad horror film, Whannell explains that the film was conceived following the advice of his agent at the time, and that a script doctor was eventually employed by the production studio. Whannell concludes the post with the description of key lessons that were learned following the Dead Silence experience. So he said, after everything is said and done, I'm almost glad Dead Silence happened because it gave me an extreme cold-faced lesson in what not to do. It was like learning to swim by leaping off Niagara Falls. I only write scripts on spec now, which means that I only write them in my own time without getting paid and then take them out into the world to see if anyone's interested. Never again will I enter the arranged marriage of selling a pitch. I have become very gun-shy about working with studios. In the world of independent film, what you write ends up on screen. Plus, they don't have the money to bring in script doctors. Works fine for me. Who knows? Maybe one day I will work with a studio again.
Oh, okay.
So it seems like this was, like, an idea he had, but it wasn't, like... You know how we talk about written and directed by? This was written by him, but it wasn't really his vision of what he wanted, right?
Well, yeah, if you think about it, like, in the context of his career, he's on the scene with a home run with Saw. Like, it's a movie that was a cultural phenomenon, and so he's like thrust into the spotlight at a pretty young age.
Mm-hmm.
And so his, like, this I think was his next movie.
Saw II was his next movie, right?
Yeah, okay, so Saw II, and then
Saw
this.
III.
No, I don't think, no, he wasn't involved with a lot of the sequels, like, basically. I don't even know if he was for sure.
Didn't he write Saw III? I don't know.
I don't think so. But
okay.
Either way. He's like, now this movie's a lesson for him of like, oh, you know, I'm this young guy, I'm the new hit horror writer and producer and whatnot, and then he gets a crash course in the reality of the studio world, and this is what comes out is Dead Silence, which is understandable, and then he takes those lessons and makes better films that he has more control over.
Yeah, it totally feels like someone being like, yo, you're the kid who did Saw. You're great. What else you got? And he was like, something with puppets. And they're like, amazing. We'll write it up. We'll give you $1 billion dollars. And he's like, what? What's happening? And then this is what we end up with, which is like, you're right. It has the bones of making something very creepy and very cool. And it just sort of turned into this weird hackneyed studio death by script doctors.
More Hollywood type horror.
Yeah, so reading that actually makes me feel a lot better about this movie, I think. Like that, okay.
Release the 1L cut. Release the 1L cut.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
That's cool.
All right, did you do your look up on Billy the Doll?
I did. I saw Billy. He's just hanging there.
And I know I said it before, but I really wanted to like kind of reiterate how much Mary Shaw totally influenced the Lady in Black from the first two Insidious movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, just the look, the approach, the veil, the eyes. I was like, oh, like...
So
this
creepy.
This is... And because I think of all of the properties associated with the two gentlemen who are most responsible for this film, James Wan and Lee Whannell, I think Insidious is my favorite of those franchises.
Okay.
So, just... I loved seeing those little tentacles and fingerprints of it. I was like, oh yeah, like, okay, this is, you know, nothing is in a vacuum. It's not like Insidious is just there in his mind without, you know, like there's a few scenes in Saw where it's like, oh, this is very Insidious-esque, right? There's a lot of editing in this movie that's like, this is very Saw-esque and all that kind of stuff. And I like seeing just the puzzle becomes more, a few more pieces landed in the puzzle of the James Wan, Lee Whannell verse,
Absolutely.
in their thing, and that I just think that's so cool because, you know, on balance, their films have been some of the highest content.
They're entertaining.
They are.
They're definitely.
And that's I think, like, I don't know if there's sequels to Dead Silence, and I don't really care if there are.
Deader Silence.
As far as I know, there's no sequel to Malignant announced yet, but I really love the idea of it being a one-off. It doesn't have to be a 40-year franchise with a million sequels. Like, I think just let this horror movie stand on its own and be like a dumb little tale that is wrapped up unsatisfyingly, but is entertaining and fun to look at. And not everything needs to be a Halloween franchise, because that is, you know, to its detriment, I think, to the lore, eventually, where it's just like, it's too much. I don't want there to be a Malignant 2, because I think Malignant 1 was fine. I don't want there to be another Dead Silence movie, because I don't care. I don't care that Mary Shaw is still out there, like, controlling Ella. If Jamie is the last victim on her list, there's no reason for her to still be around. Like, so, like, why would she keep doing it? So, just let it be a one-off. They're totally fine with that. Yeah.
Agreed.
Okay. All right. Luke, why don't you give us any final thoughts you got for this one that you haven't touched on? Scan the old mental Rolodex.
I have enjoyed talking about this movie more than I enjoyed watching it, I would say. And I do, like, that's indicative of the fact that this would have been a great movie for the three of us to be in the same room together. This had very, like, it was pick-apartable. And we don't shy away from picking apart when we are together.
Billy, do you think you enjoyed this movie more than us because you were able to watch it with Kelly, like another person?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think 100% because we got to like have side conversations and be like, oh my God, this is a perfect movie to watch in a group.
Right.
Yeah. And so I definitely miss that part of it. And again, I get more energy out of like the conversation, because there was a lot of this movie where I was like kind of like, I'm not gonna lie, there's like I was like kind of facepalm like,
I picked a bad one.
I'm sorry, Alex. I really don't like to pick bad movies. It's a stain on my character, and I apologize. But so I'm happy that it more went this way, because when I watched it on Friday, I was like, oh, I don't think this is as good as I was hoping it would be.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's a very good point. Like, I do watch these with another person, and it is fun to just sort of like experience the creepiness and experience the foolishness with another person. So, yeah, I think maybe that colors it a bit more.
Horror movies are definitely more fun with others, I think.
Mm-hmm. And fun to talk about. Mm-hmm.
Even me and Billy?
Yeah. Just, you know, when there's important dialogue, just stop talking. Yeah, you know what fair. You two are? You two are like the extra noise that Nolan doesn't cut out when there's important, yeah, like, exposition being put out.
We are.
That's right.
We are anything but silence.
Yeah. Great. Final thoughts, Alex. You got anything?
Yeah, I think all my initial thoughts about this movie still stand. Like, this, it was like fun set pieces, interesting idea, but overall it was just it was a more of a miss than a hit for me. Sure. But I think after reading that snippet about what Winnell said about Dead Silence, like, I'm able to give the two of them a lot more grace, I guess.
A lot more leeway, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, there were parts in this movie that were absolutely very fun and like, haha, like, whoa!
Duh, so crazy.
Yeah, so crazy. But, you know, it's just another page turned in the horror universe for me.
Hmm. Yeah. Just make sure there's not like another piece of paper attached to that page with tape on one side that you could flip it over and it would have like a little bit more of the answer written on it.
The whole puzzle solved.
Yeah.
He was so close. He was so close.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a blast with this one. I can't wait to see more of James Wan and Leigh Whannell. Like, go off and make your scripts that you want to. I know that when writers submit a script or they work on a script together, once it's in the hands of a studio, there's very little that they can do to control it. And if they chop it up, that's on them. And I think, like, just go off and make even more bonkers shit. Like, this is less bonkers than Malignant was. And I want him to continue to grow. And I want to see something even more from James Whannell in the future.
James Whannell.
James Wan, sorry. Pardon me. James Wan. Just,
it is a funny coincidence of their names, hey?
Yeah, just great. I loved it. So that's our final thoughts. Luke, could you do us the favor of telling us what your scariest part was?
I guess probably, again, like, all the scares were so telegraphed. So I knew I was going to be scared, but so I think probably the Henry's death scene had the most tension in the scares, because it wasn't immediate, you know, like, it actually, they did draw it out a little bit, and the hand, probably that hand coming around, that was pretty creepy.
Ooh, that was creepy. Yeah,
and
the
then,
little black fingers.
I want to give, like, an honorary shout out to how fucking creepy the dolls were, because they were just kind of, like, omni-scary throughout the film.
Yeah, I think that's the really cool part about the dolls in this movie. I think, like, if you're any other kind of doll movie that's really trying to force scares, I feel like the dolls would be doing more. But the dolls did nothing other than, you know, they turned their eyes. I think
the mouth opened a couple
mouth
times.
Dropped once, yeah. And it fell over, right?
Yeah.
Right? But
and also,
yeah,
we didn't mention this. A lot of this movie takes place at night, so it's lucky there were so many thunderstorms so that the lightning would shoot up so we could see
what
was happening.
So lucky.
Jamie, can you wash your car? There were like handprints all over his back windshield.
Yeah. Wash me, so written
funny.
In dirt on the back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lucky amount of thunderstorms.
Yeah. Nice. Nice. My scariest part, I think, like, the hand in the basement is creepy. I think anything that was under a sheet was supposed to be scary, but I was like, well, there's a body under that sheet, obviously, so I'm not scared. So I think what's going to do it for me is when he's in the motel room, the red light in, apparently, where it's just like, no drapes here, just a big flashing red light, $9.99 a night or whatever.
You get what you pay for.
And he's looking in the mirror and he kind of sees like the dummy sitting on the chair by the window, and then it's reflected in the mirror, and then the head kind of turns and he sees again a very conveniently timed thunderstorm or something where Mary is standing behind the doll for the first time, and it's just like, that's creepy. And you know, I think that was for me the scariest part. And then I was annoyed because I was like, why did you put the doll sitting in your kitchenette table? Put that in his case. What are you doing? So that's my scariest part. What about you, Alex?
I think my scariest part was any of the times that it flashes to a face that just had its tongue ripped out. When it's just like the mouth is agape, but it's very bloody and very gory, but you only get a brief flash of it, whether it was like Lisa at the start or Henry in the middle / close to the end. It's just like a very quick flash, but it's just like the first time I didn't know what to expect because I didn't know about the tongue thing. So it was, I guess the first time you see Lisa's face after she gets killed was probably my scariest part.
Yeah. Those like reveals were supposed to be scary, but then they did that thing, that like mid-2000s thing where it's like they do a jerky zoom in on it and you get like five different frames where you're just like, I feel like I'm being assaulted by the image a little bit. And it's like, what was that? What did I look at? That was gross, I think. But yeah. Okay. Actually, you know, this before we rate it, I do have to make an apology to you, especially Luke. And I want to do this up top, but I forgot. So last week I was doing the edit for
Oculus
last week. And we were talking about, I was listening off all the things in Autumn that I really enjoyed. And you made a Green Day joke, you know, wake me up before or once September starts or something.
Put me to
sleep. Yeah, put me to sleep when September starts. And I missed an opportunity to make a Blink 182 joke by listing all the fall things. So I apologize. I'm sorry.
Apology more than accepted.
Why didn't you just edit that? You edit this into the previous episode.
That's already posted. I'm not doing it.
Can't be done.
Also, I really enjoyed watching your face while I watched you predict where I was going with this joke.
Always.
It's very good. Always. All right. Let's rate this mofo. What do we got?
Well, I mean, there's like a million things that I could choose that would, you know, a doll or, you know, fucking
a severed
tongue.
Mortician
blade. So, yeah. Sure. But yeah. I'm actually going to go a little bit more auteur for this one. So we're going to rate this out of what I consider the James Wan watermark for his movies, which is we're going to rate this out of a 180 degree camera turn.
Yeah,
because every single one of his movies has a very obvious and this movie was like during the first time Jamie's coming down the staircase at his dad's house.
Yeah,
and he's just like, you know, it's the very beginning of Insidious. It happens a few times in The Conjuring, so it's like,
love
okay
it. Love it.
So yes, we're gonna rate this out of 5 James Wan 180 degree camera spins.
James Wan patented camera spin shots. Yeah.
It's like, you know how like in the show Adventure Time, there's always like one scene with a snail somewhere.
Yeah. Just somewhere.
It's like James Wan. There's always a spin. Anyway. I like this movie more after talking about it. Not necessarily because I think it's a better movie, but because it's definitely like a movie that reminds me why this podcast can be really fun. Mm-hmm. So it gets points in that way, but it's not a great movie. But I'm glad we did it. So straight down the middle, 2.5.
Nice.
Camera spins out of 5.
So that's 360 plus 90 degrees. 450 degrees of
rotation. I don't think all of them are 360. I think its signature is actually a 180.
No, but you giving it 2. So that's 180 times 180.
Oh,
360.
I see.
And then you're giving it another half, which is 90 degrees. I did.
Yeah, I thought the 5 star would be 180. So whatever half of
I understand.
Itself. But,
okay, sure. I gotcha.
We had different denominators.
You two are such nerds.
Yep.
What are you giving this one, Alex?
Yeah, I've said all I've had to say about this movie. Very, very okay, if not average. So yeah, 2 out of 5 180 degree camera pans.
Cool. Yeah, wow, my mark is a lot higher, and I feel maybe that it's not deserving of it because it's not a good movie.
It doesn't matter. This is a rating. You give it whatever the fuck you want.
That's true. I can give whatever the fuck I want. And
the inconsistency of our ratings is the only consistent part.
It's as inconsistent as the plot of this movie was. It wasn't good, but I had a lot of fun. I think you're right that watching it with somebody else is the best way to go about doing this. So if you want to listen to this, dear listeners, absolutely get some people together and watch this movie because it's very fun to make fun of. And so for that reason, I think my rating is like pretty close to a 4, but not quite. I'm giving it a 3.8 out of 180 degrees. So I don't know what that works out to. And I'm not going to, I could figure it out.
This would be a great like Mystery Science Theater
film. Absolutely. Absolutely,
right?
It would.
Yeah.
So 3.8 out of 5 for me. So Luke, kick off the cheering section, please.
So I'm actually going to cheer my new job, so to speak, a new role at the old job. So I actually officially started it at the beginning of summer, but it was like right when summer was starting, obviously. So it was not actually what the role entails. So now that I've had a week of after school and actually kind of like figuring out what it's going to look like, I'm really excited about the potential in it. It's kind of like for the context of the two of you, it's similar to like the coordinator role at a club, but with more autonomy around what programs to run. And I'm going to do guitar lessons. I'm going to get a staff to do a film club on Friday nights
for teens.
I'm in charge of booking all the skateboard lessons and other programs we want to do, like a podcast and stuff like that. So
cool.
I get to be in charge of all that. Plus, I do all of the like registrations, which means I get to talk to all the parents, which is like a really fun part of the job. It's like getting to know the community. And on top of all of that, we are growing quite a bit in our numbers, which is always
nice.
Always growing. Yeah. Well,
Mr. Manager.
For example, there'd be like days last school year where we'd have like maybe 7 or 8 kids for the after school program, and now I don't think we have a day under 20. So
holy shit, man. Wow, yeah. That's amazing.
So
good job.
Things are going well.
That's great.
So I'm cheering, you know, being feeling like you have a job that kind of fulfills you.
That's amazing. I love that. Mm-hmm. I did the math on my ratings just so we can do it. So if we're rating it as a full 5 stars would be 180 degrees, then my 3.8 is 136.8.
Oh,
but if
that's kind
of
obtuse, isn't it?
A little bit, yeah. But if each point is at its own 180 degrees, then my rating is 684 degrees.
Oh my
which
gosh.
Which is... all around and around and around we go. So anyway.
It's like almost a snowboard move.
Almost. So close. Okay. Anyway, my cheer this week is I'm also starting things. It's currently September as we record this, but school has started up again. I'm taking some pretty interesting courses that I'm really excited about, including an option course that's just about the creative process for creative writing. I've always wanted to dabble in with writing a little bit of stuff, and I, you know, don't really know how to get into the headspace to do it. So this course is online. It promises to, it's not going to like make you a great writer, and you don't have to have something handed in by the end of the semester. You just have to be like showing that you're working on writing stuff. And so I'm really excited to like sink my teeth into like seeing how I can write and write some, we'll see what happens. So I'm excited for that. I'm excited for like my neurobiology course that I'm doing, which is, pretty interesting to figure out how brains and neurons work. And yeah, I'm eager to get back into school. I'm here for it. So let's go. Semester number 4. That's what I'm cheering.
Nice.
Alex Wan, what are you cheering?
It's like I said at the start, it's been kind of an uneventful week, but I've been at my current job for 3 years now.
Oh, wow.
And I was given the choice of a $25 gift card up to any place I wanted as a gift. So I chose Superstore. And,
wow.
yeah, with with that gift card, I went to buy nicer ingredients and I cooked myself a fancy meal this week. So that was nice. I didn't have to look for a sale for beans, you know?
Nice, nice. Love it.
I can't believe it's been 3 years since you decided to leave your previous job.
Yeah, yeah. It's crazy. Time goes by pretty quick. Huh?
It is crazy. Well, congrats on the longevity in your job. I really thought the choice was going to be a $25 gift card or something else, but no, it was $25 to wherever you wanted. So, okay.
Yeah, I think Superstore.
Nice.
Gotta love it. All right. Well, that's going to be it for another episode, and we'll get to what we're watching next week in just a second, but in the meantime, thank you to everyone who listens, and please, if you do listen, let us know how you like the show. Send us a message, leave us a review, a rating on iTunes. You know, it helps us grow up, go up and get more people listening.
Well, always grow.
Anything sounds good. That
always grown. You know, we haven't got a review in over a year, which is a little bit demoralizing, I won't lie. So if you're you know, out there and you haven't reviewed, come on.
I guess I could leave a review.
You don't have to. You're on the show. That's more than enough. But yeah, help us grow and reach new audience. We're working hard every week, and not really hard, but we're having fun.
You
can also support the show.
I'm not.
I'm working so hard. You can also support the show over on Patreon, patreon.com/nothingtofear. We just wrapped up our the last big thing we had was the Ask Us Anything. I haven't got any new content up there right now, but it is fun. It's like $1 a month minimum. You can support us getting a little bit of money for what we do. And yeah, you can also follow us on our social medias. Nothing to Fear Podcast is the Instagram. Interact with us interact with me about the show on that platform. That's the best place to do that. You can also send a request to follow me on Instagram. I'm at DesignBilly. It's a private account now because there's a lot of shitty people on the internet and I'm tired of weeding them out of my follows. So send me a request if you want to chat with me over there at DesignBilly. And you can also catch up with what Luke is podding about over at The Things He'll Say.
Really True Fiction and the Liberal Soul podcasts, available on all streaming or podcast apps of your choice.
Nice.
And Full Spectrum Cinema, if you live in Nelson. Tuesdays, 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Also available on Mixcloud/Lexicorm.
Love it. Check the show notes for that. And you can also hear Alex's Song of the Day over at...
One Song a Day, all one word, WAN, on Instagram. And there's a playlist you can follow there.
Nice. You can check that out. And that's great. Okay, so yeah. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Luke and Alex, for sitting down with me again and chatting. But next week, Alex, your second pick of a scary movie. You did great with Hell House LLC. Mm-hmm. Can you go 2 for 2 with next week's movie?
Hell House 2?
Hell House 2.
Dead Silence 2?
So the first movie I picked was a French movie that I can't find anywhere. So we're not going to do that one. But I did.
Great.
I heard very scary things about it. Do you want to know what it was going to be?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, it was going to be 2007's Inside.
Ooh, that sounds gross. Okay.
I couldn't find it anywhere, so maybe we'll do it another time. But instead, I'm going to pick 2017's The Ritual.
Ooh, The Ritual.
You know, it's funny. An additional peek behind the curtain. That was going to be my pick if we did a Spooky Forest.
So
we did Dolls this week, and The Ritual spooky is set forest. In a spooky forest. So.
Okay, well, you gotta pick a different theme, Billy, for next month.
I didn't.
Okay, or how about we do doll movies that are set in a forest?
Spooky forest dolls.
Yeah.
Yeah. So The Ritual.
Yeah, The Ritual. Okay, yeah. Sounds good. Okay, I can't wait. I love me a spooky forest. And yeah, well, we'll see you then next week. And until then, folks, remember, they're just movies. There's nothing to fear.